KXRN LP Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach. Member supported KX93.5. This disclaimer is a statement notifying the listening audience that any opinion expressed on the air is not reflective of KX93.5, its management, or its board of directors.
And good morning, and welcome to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, and I'm a clinical psychologist. My name is Kim Sage, and this is a show that airs live every Sunday morning at 8 a.m., where we explore our moods, our minds, and our real lives. Sometimes I'll have guests, and sometimes I'll be flying solo like I am today. But I always welcome new ideas and thoughts or anything you want to share with me. You're welcome to contact me at moodywithdrsage@gmail.com. And so today I thought we would talk a little bit about a topic I've been discussing in the last few weeks, which is adult attachment. I really believe that whether you are single or in a relationship or you're a parent, this information can be incredibly helpful and really sort of unlock the secrets to understanding why your partner does the things they do that sometimes you love and sometimes drive you completely crazy. So we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk a lot about our childhoods and how that affects who we choose, why we choose, whether we stay or leave, and what we can do about it. We'll be right back.
When you try your best but you don't succeed, when you get what you want but not what you need, when you feel so tired but you can't sleep, stuck in reverse, and the tears come streaming down your face, when you lose something you can't replace, when you love someone but it goes to waste, could it be worse? Lights will
dream.
Welcome back to Moody with Dr. Sage. The show airs live every Sunday at 8 a.m. It's a little early for me, too. And I'm glad you're joining me. So today we're going to talk about adult attachment. And when we've been talking in the last few shows, we've been referencing the idea of why we are triggering each other or how we operate as a couple and why that's important to understand the special dance that each of us do in relationships. So I just kind of want to give you a little bit of information about where the idea comes from. For all of you listening who may be in the field of psychology, I'm going to make this super short and sweet. There are really a lot of interesting details you could explore. But I'm just going to summarize it and keep it simple for the average listener who doesn't really necessarily spend hours pouring through psychology textbooks, which is a whole other party in and of itself. So basically the idea is that when we're born, actually when we're in utero, we are attached. We're attached to our mothers or we don't survive. So we need to have that connection in order to thrive, not only in the womb, but afterwards, and frankly, for a very long time. So we are in a situation where we need a primary caregiver. And there was some research done in the 70s. It was initially begun by a guy named John Bowlby. And then Mary Ainsworth furthered his research and did this research study called The Strange Situation. And a lot of steps were involved, but basically what they did was take babies who were under 18 months, and they would bring baby and mom into a room filled with toys. And then at some point, a stranger, the researcher, would come in, and they would observe what happened when mom left the room. Now, the stranger would also leave and come back. There was a two-way mirror. But what we're really talking about is what was happening between baby and mom when the babies became frightened or when mom left the room. And there are technically four different types of profiles that are seen, but we're really going to talk about three. The fourth one is really more about what they call disorganized, and it's really for people who are, or children actually, who have experienced pretty severe neglect and trauma. So we're just going to talk about the main three and what really happened when these babies were left. So the first type of baby and mom, and granted the researchers had been exploring and watching the quality of caregiving long before this, but what we're talking about is how responsive was mom? What were her actions? How did the baby respond? And remember, this is the 70s, so of course there are lots of ways you can be a caregiver, but we're just talking about mothers and babies based on this research. So there were three different types that emerged. The first one was what we call securely attached babies. These were babies that when mom left the room, they became upset. And, you know, they had been exploring their toys, but when mom left, they became upset. And the researcher was, you know, this stranger there, tried to engage them a bit. But when mom returned, they were soothed at some point. They would go to her, they'd be comforted by her. You know, she was a secure base in the first time of the first part of the exploration. And so they securely attached to her. And then, you know, they would go back to exploring the room a little bit at some point. The second type, what's what I'm just going to call anxious attachment, is a type of baby that became really upset and was never in the beginning as open to exploring and was pretty clingy on some level to mom. And when mom left, became very upset. And when she came back, you know, they were sort of giving this push-pull, I love you, I hate you. They would at times, you know, be angry and then reach out for mom. It was sort of this confusion. I'm mad at you for leaving me, but I need you. And the third type was what we call avoidant. And these were really babies who I think are just so fascinating to me. They would sometimes not even really register when mom left the room. And when she came back, you know, they might follow her with their eyes when she left. And when mom came back, they sort of seemed unfazed by it. And on some level, what was happening was these babies had already learned that I can't necessarily, you know, depend on what my mom's going to do. And so I need to sort of take care of myself. And maybe these are babies who were left in the crib for a long time to cry. Whatever it was, they had sort of learned, at least outwardly, to not be that affected by her choices and behaviors. But what is, to me, so incredibly fascinating is that when they measured their stress hormones and their heart rates, these babies we're going to call avoidant were just as upset as the babies who were anxious and crying. So think about that inside. Inside, you are completely falling apart. But at 18 months or so, you've already learned that I'm not going to get my needs met. So if you think about, okay, these types of babies grow up to be adults. And they grow up to be adults that we have relationships with. And so think about how triggering it might be as a partner when your partner just pulls away from you and sort of is being avoidant and learning to deal with themselves on the inside. Or if they're clingy and needy and always need to be reminded how much you love them and need them, what that feels like, especially if you're an avoidant type person, which often happens. Oftentimes, anxious people and avoidant people, on some level, they get their needs met, especially in the beginning, and eventually it becomes very triggering. But that's why it matters. And so this is why you hear people say things like, well, you know, I have a partner, but I feel completely alone. Or you'll hear people say something like, gosh, why is she or he with that person? They're such a jerk. They don't even treat them well. What's that about? And so that's why it matters. You know, the quality of caregiving that you're receiving as a young child has a big impact on how you show up in relationships. So on that note, we're going to take a quick break because I don't want to overwhelm you, but we're going to come back in a few minutes and talk further about adult attachment.
What will you do when you call me?
back to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, Kim Sage. I'm a clinical psychologist. And what we're talking about today is the concept of adult attachment theory. And I was just sharing with you a little bit about where that research comes from and how all of that evolved. And I just want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Moody with Dr. Sage. It's a show that airs live every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. where we explore our moods, our minds, and our real lives. Okay, back to adult attachment. So the fundamental underlying principles around adult attachment are that we monitor and maintain emotional and physical closeness with our beloved, the person that we love, and that we reach out for this person, just like we did, we were talking about babies and moms. We reach out for them when we're unsure or upset or feeling down. We often miss them when we're away from them, and that at the end of the day, if you think about it, you know, as I said before, coming from the idea of our childhoods and needing to have our needs met, that when we go out into the world and we create adult relationships, in many ways, we are still seeking for this person to be our safe harbor and our shelter, and that they'll be there for us when we go out into the world, that we can go out, just like I said with the experiment, we can go out and explore the toys, go out and explore the world, and come back and be met with love and protection and safety and all those types of things. So because those things are so basic to our adult attachment, we often end up finding ourselves in relationships that don't necessarily go the way we want it to. And the idea is that we are seeking to heal, oftentimes, the childhoods that we didn't get, the parents we didn't get, the partners that we hoped we'd have, even if it was in other caregiving partners, let's say parents and grandparents or aunts and uncles, if those were our primary caregivers. But what we're doing is we're going out and seeking people to heal and to create a safe support system. But what ends up happening is that we often choose somebody who is very similar to the parent or caregiver that we had. Even though in the beginning we swear up and down, it looks so different. This person is going to just be my everything. And here's a quote from Stan Takin, as I mentioned in a few shows ago. He says, "The partner we unconsciously choose is dauntingly similar, warts and all, especially the warts, to the caretakers who reared us. Thus, the needs we want met in our adult intimate relationships, those that were not met in our childhoods, are presented to persons who are woefully similar to the persons who didn't meet these needs when we were children." So what that's saying is we're going out and we're trying to choose partners who are going to be different, but this is why we often end up choosing even the same type of partner over and over again, or we end up being so often disappointed in the partners we did choose. Now, the idea behind all of this, and there's a lot of different ideas about attachment and the idea of codependency and how does all that work, but according to people who really believe in attachment theory, this idea of codependency is being challenged as being more of a myth, because this idea of I'm going to do me and you're going to do you, to be honest, it hasn't worked very well. And marriage counseling has frankly failed in a lot of areas, because this cultural bias now in the last, 20 to 30 years around, well, I'm just going to do me and you do you. Often what happens is it neglects the we. And so we're not really acknowledging that we have these evolutionary ties to being a we. And so no one is saying that you shouldn't be able to have your own life and be independent, make your own choices. But I think we have to also bring the me, the you, and the we into our relationships. The brain is really wired to seek that type of support. And so we have to face the truth of that, in my opinion, and figure out how we're going to navigate that. So if you think about that, then it becomes sort of a dependency paradox, because we are more likely to go out into the world if we have someone who we can count on. And so that regardless of how independent we are, the dependency is still there. And the idea is that vulnerability and fear of loss always exist. It's just a matter of how you deal with it and what your relationship style is. So one of the ideas that we also talk about is that when people act out in relationships, you know, they're name calling, or they're calling you multiple times, or being jealous or being distant, that what these really are at their core are what we call protest behaviors. So if you think about a child, you know, what do children do when you don't give them what they want? They often pout, they often cry, they protest. And so if you can think about, of course, we're not doing that on purpose to act like children often as adults, but maybe we are. But what we're really doing is trying to say, hey, pay attention to me. I'm not getting my needs met. And then we have to figure out, you know, if the needs are realistic and if they actually are capable of being met. But underneath all of that, what we're saying is, can I count on you? Can I depend on you? Are you going to be there for me when I need you? And will you respond? And do I matter? And so things like anger and criticism and demands, they're really just cries to our partners, trying to stir their hearts and trying to get them to come back to us. So if you take all of that and you wrap it together with, okay, so how does all of that play out in these styles I discussed earlier? These three styles we're talking about, which are being what we call secure attachment. I'm just going to call it anxious attachment and avoidant. I know people don't love those words, but at the core, I think it's okay to be able to own what your style is. It doesn't mean that you can't be in a relationship and you can't make it work with someone who's different from you, because the odds are going to be that your partner is going to be different from you. But if you have a secure partner, these people, generally speaking, are going to be, you know, fairly comfortable with intimacy. They're going to be fairly warm and loving and be able to be present for you, generally speaking, especially if you pull them aside and you say, hey, you know, I need you in this way. They tend to show up for you. People who have a more anxious attachment, these people often crave intimacy, but they often are very preoccupied about their relationships. And at the core, they tend to worry about their partner's ability to love them back. And then finally, avoidant, if that's your style, these people tend to equate intimacy with a loss of independence. And they're often trying to minimize closeness, right? So if you think about those babies, you know, maybe inside they're freaking out, but on the outside, they need to pull away to be safe, to regulate, which can feel like abandonment, especially if you're an anxious person. And so secure people, you know, they don't really play games. They tend to compromise well. They might introduce you to their friends and family early on. Anxious people, on the other hand, are much more likely to suspect you of cheating. They're often game players in relationships. Sometimes they might let you set the tone. And anxious people are often unhappy when they're not in relationships. These people say, well, I need to be in relationships. I'm happier in relationships. But they often have a lot of insecurities, which often play out. And then avoidant people often have very unrealistic romantic views of relationships. They're often mistrustful. And these are the people that when you're arguing with them, they shut down, they need to go away, or they might explode or even do both. They can be really confusing. And so, you know, each style just really differs in the way they express all these things. And so how that shows up in intimacy, the way they deal with conflict, their attitudes towards sex, their ability to communicate what they need and what they want, what they expect from you, it's gonna be really filtered through that lens of what their childhood was like. And so, you know, when we meet somebody, what we're really doing in the beginning, right, we're not saying, hey, I'm an avoidant. What are you? Are you anxious? Let's hook up, right? That's not going to come out. In the beginning, it's going to just seem like, oh, I'm just the best and you're the best and we're so great together. We're sort of what we call auditioning. You know, we're auditioning to be different than we really are. And it can be very alluring. And the brain is just shooting off all these chemicals of love and addiction and it all feels so good. And then you wake up one day and you're just like, oh my gosh, I don't even know how I got in this relationship. I don't know why you act like that. I don't understand you. Because that audition and honeymoon phase start to wear off and it can be very, very confusing. I guess what I'll wrap up in the next few minutes before we take a little break is to say that, you know, accepting who you are in these types of patterns, it's not a bad thing. It's extremely powerful. Because if you know that when your partner shuts down and leaves you, it triggers your abandonment, then you can ask for what you need. If you know that when your partner is extremely clingy or you're really clingy and you need to be more mindful of how you do that, you know, it's something you can keep your eye on and be aware of. So none of these are negative. They're all just, you know, and they are fluid. They're not 100% traits. They can fluctuate and change. When you're in relationships with somebody, let's say you're more anxious and you have a secure partner, they can help you become more secure. And vice versa, you know, if you're secure and your partner's super anxious, they can tap into some anxiety and anxious qualities in you too. So the idea is that you're co-regulating each other, and that's why it's so powerful to understand. Now, in terms of how often we see these types of patterns, the research says about 50% if people are secure, and around 20-ish something percent, 25 are anxious, a little further than that, a little higher avoidant, and then there's a combination. In my experience, I think that these are really fluid, they're on a spectrum, and maybe because I see couples in crisis or people, but I don't think that's the case. I mean, certainly at times it is. But I think all of us have capacities to lean one way or the other, and yet the partners we choose can help soothe and calm those things, or they can make them worse. So we're going to take a little break in a second, but just want to remind you, you've been listening to Moody with Dr. Sage. And this is a show, I'm having a hard time talking this morning, a show that explores our moods, our minds, and our real lives. And it airs live every Sunday at 8. And I just want to remind everyone that the show you're listening to today is meant to serve for informational purposes only, that it does not imply we are in a therapeutic relationship. But if you need help, I highly encourage you to contact a mental health provider. And on that note, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
I drew a line for you.
To Moody with Dr. Sage, a show that explores our moods, our minds, and our real lives. And so before the break, we were talking about the different styles of adult attachment. And the reason why this matters is that it matters if you're single and you're looking for someone. It matters if you're in a relationship, and it matters if you're a parent. I don't really see any situation where it's not relevant. I think that understanding, even as a caregiver, how you parent your child is going to have implications for the partners that they choose. Now, that being said, I don't want, you know, this generation, I'm one of them, are in this sort of, I must be the perfect parent, and it's impossible to be. So let me just put that out there as a mother of four. So don't get too freaked out if we're talking about these things and you're having some insights. You know, it's never too late to change your life and change your relationships. All right, so I'm just going to go a little bit more deeply into the three styles, and then talk about a little bit about decoding our partners, and then hopefully just give you a few tips on some things you can do. But just to go a little further in, let's say you are, what I've been talking about resonates with you in terms of being a more anxious person. You're a more anxious romantic partner. So what we're talking about is you're someone who you really love to be close to your partners, but sometimes you find yourself wondering if your partner feels the same way. And because of this, for you, relationships consume a lot of energy. You really find yourself obsessing and thinking and going over and over it, whatever happened or the dynamics. And you're often very sensitive to small changes in your partner's mood or their actions. And I'm guessing that you might be told you take things too personally. You know, this isn't about you. This is kind of what would happen in that type of dynamic. And so as a result, you often experience a lot of negative emotions. And so you're upset. You just tend to be a person that gets upset more. And as a result of that, you might act out and say things that you regret. And so for you, the key is that having a partner who is reassuring and provides security can help you feel much safer. So for you, let's say because of your anxiety, you know, you need your partner to check in with you through text message more often. You just need that. So it's okay to say, hey, babe, like, you know, could you just let me know when you get there? You know, this can't be like I'm monitoring you or a nonstop check-in. But, you know, it's important to ask for what you need. And if just giving your partner or shooting them a text helps reduce their anxiety or calm that sort of wave or storm inside, then do it, right? So people who are secure, this is going to sound like blah, 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 boring. And to be honest, I don't know that many totally secure people. I think that this sounds really good, but I do know that there are some. But I think, like I said, that it's really easy to get pulled into one or the other. But generally speaking, these are people who are warm and loving. They enjoy intimacy and they don't overly obsess about it. They tend to take things in stride and not get, you know, they're not easily upset. Not that they don't get upset, but they're just not super triggered by small things. And that for the most part, they can communicate their feelings and have conversations about getting needs met. So they tend to be, you know, they're pretty good at reading your mood and your cues. They'll be saying to you, hey, you know, what's going on? You seem upset today or something's going on with you and I want to know. They tend to share with you and the things that are successful for you and be, you know, helpful in problem solving. And they're, for the most part, not perfectly, but for the most part, they're able to be there for you when you need them. Now, when we talk about people who are more avoidant, these are people who I also have found that a lot of more avoidant people can often be more introverted and that it can be a little confusing sometimes. Because if you're a person who needs to regulate being alone, that can be misinterpreted. So it is important to sort of to explore, and I'm going to do a show on introversion and extroversion at some point because I think those are fascinating topics. I know they're often in the media, but they're often misunderstood too. Okay, so if you're avoidant, you're a person who tends to be more independent, and being self-sufficient is really important for you. You tend to prefer autonomy and being on your own to intimate relationships. And even when you are with someone and you want to be close, there's a point where it just becomes too close for you and it can be uncomfortable. So you need to sometimes pull yourself back out of that. As an avoidant person, these types of people don't spend a lot of time worrying about romantic relationships or being rejected. So they're the kind of that opposite of the anxious, right? They're not obsessing. They tend to not open up as easily. And if you're a partner of someone who's an avoidant, you might find yourself saying that, gosh, they're so emotionally distant. I don't know how to get to them. But remember, inside those babies that were avoidant were still having a lot of emotional reactions. They just weren't showing them on the outside. So that can be going on. And because of this, right, because of that baby who was, you know, who at 18 months had already learned, I'm not going to get my needs met that much, so I'm not even going to get too upset when mom leaves. But they're still aware that she's leaving. So they're often on high alert for any sign that you're trying to control them or come into their territory. And then what do? They pull away. And, you know, you can't figure out what just happened. I don't know. You just went into your cave, metaphorically speaking, or maybe physically speaking now with all these, she sheds and men caves. I don't know, you know, but it is hard to understand when they do that. And it can feel very personal, and especially if you're an anxious person, but even if you're not. So those are a little bit deeper issues with regard to being a certain style. And if you want to know, so how do I look for these things? Like, now that you're talking about all this stuff, great, but like, how do I know? Well, there are a few things you can look for. You want to be an observer, you know, observe your partner, how they deal with stress, how they deal with intimacy, how they deal with life in general, and listen. You know, you don't have to talk all the time like I'm doing right now. Listen, see what they're saying. What are they telling you? Instead of asking yourself, especially if you're dating, you know, does this person like me? Why don't you ask yourself, maybe, is this someone I should emotionally invest in? Is this person capable of giving me what I need? And am I capable of giving them what they need? You also might want to be thinking about, are they capable of intimacy? Do they send mixed signals? Or are they really interested in being close to you? You know, that's something that you're gonna become more aware of as the relationship plays out over time. And that can be hard to see in the beginning, as I said, because in the beginning, we're putting on our best face and we're auditioning and we're dancing and making it all look so the package looks so appealing in the beginning. And those things are in there too, but they're not all that we're going to understand about each other as time goes on. So if you're listening and you're thinking, I don't really like this idea of me being an avoidant or anxious, but that feels right. What can I do about it? Well, a couple things. You can do some journaling, really focusing on your behaviors and what you'd like to change. You know, research shows that journaling alone reduces blood pressure. That's just sort of the purging out of what you're feeling. But it also allows you to, you know, go back and explore your thoughts and see where, you know, I know I wrote this in a place of emotionality, but this doesn't really feel accurate. I need to maybe rethink this. And it helps you sometimes make sense of your story, you know, even reflecting on your own childhood and thinking about the quality of your parental caregiving. I do want to say that, as I said before, no parent is perfect. And fundamentally, we all fail each other on some level. Secure parents with secure parents with secure parents going generations back. There's just no way that there haven't been times when a parent wasn't there for you, couldn't give you what you needed. So it's not about demonizing our parents either. It's about understanding where we came from and how that shows up now. So I just want to put that out there because I think people sometimes think in therapy, oh, we're just going back and, you know, attacking our parents in our childhood or saying I had a perfect childhood, which, trust me, isn't the case either because there is no such thing. But it is important. It's sort of like being an investigator. Yeah, you may discover that there are issues with your parents that you still need to address. That's okay. But don't use this information to make it all catastrophic, I guess I should say. Use it to help understand yourself. So you can be self-reflective and maybe work on being more mindful of the way you engage. You might actually consider, you know, reading books, going to therapy, listening to podcasts. There's a lot of information out there now about how to work on unhealthy relationship patterns. And one of my favorite quotes about all of this comes from Marianne Williamson. As you guys know, probably know her, she's a spiritual teacher and she's just amazing. But what she says is that healing doesn't mean the damage never occurred. It means that the damage no longer controls our lives. So I think that's important to know that, you know, just take that for what it is. Now, I think at this point, we'll probably just start to wrap up the show because I don't want to overwhelm everyone. But I do think it's important to know that there are lots of ways to heal your life, lots of ways to get your needs met, and that it's never too late to start communicating with your partner. This isn't about discovering, oh, they're an avoidant and I'm anxious and that won't work. It's about discovering, okay, what do we need to do to make it work? There are a few great books out there that I love with regard to this topic. One of them is called Attached by Amir Levine. There's another one called Wired for Love, which I think I mentioned before, by Stan Tatkin. There's a book called Wired for Dating, also by Stan. And he also has a great Audible. I actually make this recommendation to a lot of people in my practice who don't like to read but like to listen to books on tape or podcasts and walk. It's called Your Brain on Love. And it kind of just goes through these attachment styles. But it's more of a manual about, okay, so this is my partner's style. What do I need to do to make things better? You know, none of this is about overanalyzing everything and then getting stuck there. We want you to understand it and then to use it to change your life. I know that it helped me understand historically my own behavior patterns and relationships. It was like kind of illuminating and a little bit mind-blowing to understand why certain things didn't work and why they were so hard and so hurtful, and also about what I need to do to be a better partner. And on that note, I think we will wrap up the show today, but I just want to thank you for listening and remind you that this show airs live every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Please feel free to contact me with any ideas or thoughts or questions at moodywithdrsage@gmail.com. And once again, remember that everything we talked about today is not about implying that we are in a therapeutic relationship. I know I keep saying it, but from a liability perspective and just to be super clear with you guys, it's really important that you just, you know, listen and take it with whatever you want to do with it and then seek the help of someone else if you feel that you need it. I look forward to seeing you again and talking with you again next week. On my website, actually, on drkimsage.com, drkimsage.com. I have a lot of great resources on the resource page, including apps and links to meditations, but all the books I'll talk about, I will always make sure they're up there. Any of the podcasts or anything else like that that I reference, I'll make sure it's on the resource page. So on that note, I hope you have a beautiful Sunday and just enjoy your day.